and welcome to episode 40 of the More Than Books podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Joel, and I'm here with Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hi.
So today we're going to be talking about a topic that is kind of popular in libraries right now. It's something I've been hearing a lot more about in the past few years. A lot of libraries building up collections of zines. Right. So we're going to be talking about zines. But before we dive into that, we wanted to do a quick follow-up because there's some current kind of breaking news related to one of our previous topics. So we wanted to have kind of a little discussion about that before we dived into our main topic. So way back when in 2016, we did an episode called The Disinformation Age about fake news and social media. And yeah, so in that episode, we kind of picked apart the trend of people calling things fake news, but also actual fake news, where people were producing stories that were legitimately fake in order to be shared on social media. But, you know, since 2016, that has been kind of a popular catchphrase that is, I mean, for reasons, I guess.
It's practically become a meme at this point. So, which is kind of unfortunate in many respects.
And the new popular, I think, definition of fake news is anything that you don't agree with, even if it's true.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, which is a very sad state of affairs. I mean, that podcast episode, we focused on actual fake news, people publishing incorrect and fake stories.
Demonstrably.
Yeah. Like lies just in order for them to go viral and get shared on social media to manipulate public opinion. Yep. That was kind of the focus. But unfortunately, you know, times have changed since then. And while that is still a problem, that still happens. Mm-hmm. Just there's a new problem of anybody calling anything fake news. And a story from this month, fairly recent. I think there was actually an update yesterday on it. But a public library system in Florida, and I believe it was the Citrus County, Florida public library system, wanted to get a digital subscription to the New York Times for their library system. And it came up at a county commission meeting where they were talking about whether or not they'd appropriate the funds for this digital subscription. Mm-hmm. I have a story from November 5th in the Washington Post about this that I'm using as my reference. We'll have all the links in the show notes as usual. Right. But this is an annual subscription of $2,700 to give all 70,000 plus patrons access to a digital version of the New York Times.
Correct.
The library system did already have a print subscription, which I believe they said cost about $3,000 a year. And I think that this is the digital subscription would be on top of the print subscription. It wouldn't be replacing because I think they have package deals and things like that. Basically, the digital subscription, all of the patrons could read it whenever they want on from a mobile device or from a tablet or
presumably
computer.
Presumably, just have to log in with their public library credentials, their barcode number or whatever. And
before we dive into what happened, we should start off by saying this is not uncommon. Like, this is incredibly incredibly common thing that a service that libraries provide is digital access to newspapers,
a variety of newspapers,
journals. You know, I mean, we provide access to a lot of mainstream newspapers, including the Wall Street Journal. So the request came up, and they basically were debating in this city council meeting or county commission meeting whether or not to allow the library to subscribe to this.
Right.
And one of the commissioners says, I will not be voting for this. I don't want the New York Times in this country. And he called the paper fake news in the meeting, basically because he feels that the paper has been unfair to our current political leaders, which is if you, I mean, think about whatever you want about the New York Times, but it's kind of historically known as a very centrist paper. It's not overly one way or the other on the political spectrum. But of course, like, the county commission, who I don't even know why they're involved in what the library is providing access to other than general approving an annual budget, denying access for all of their patrons, like 70,000 plus people, on the basis of a political opinion, it's pretty, and with pretty harsh words.
It's not a good look. Even taking into account that some of those constituents may very well have agreed with the political positions of some of the people present on that Board of Commissioners meeting, it is antithetical to the purpose of public libraries.
So they even mentioned that it wasn't the money that was the issue.
Correct.
So
that would be understandable.
One of the people on the commission said that the library could take the money from an institutional subscription and do something else with it. Right. And that community members who really wanted to read the paper could simply sign up for home delivery. So pay for it yourself, because we're not going to give money to this news organization. So the whole meeting turned into a big just dog pile on these supposedly nonpartisan county commissioners. It's supposed to be a nonpartisan board. Mm. But unfortunately, yeah, the committee decided that they weren't going to allow the money to be spent on that. I think... The newest update was yesterday on the story, from what I saw, which would have been at the time of this recording on November 20th. And they affirmed that denial. Like they had, because, you know, there was a big backlash, and then they had a kind of a town hall meeting about it.
Sure.
And then they met again and affirmed the denial. So the public library system cannot spend money on a digital subscription to the New York Times. So this is kind of a big deal in library land, mainly because libraries are supposed to be apolitical. Well, libraries are apolitical.
Right. Ideally,
yeah. And that's the American Library Association's position. Basically, we're supposed to provide access to information regardless of political bent. So it's unfortunate. So the ALA did respond like pretty quickly after that. Initial story came out.
The American Library Association.
Yeah, they're the and we talk about ALA a lot on our podcast. I know that there's been probably multiples of these stories where we've brought up the ALA press release and
right, undoubtedly.
Yeah, kind of read out their opinion. So the American Library Association statement is, the core mission of public libraries is to provide access to a wide range of information and ideas that enable each person to become an informed and active member of society. To this end, public libraries create opportunities for each member of the community to learn about current events, ideas, and opinions via a diverse set of perspectives so that members of the community have the opportunity to make informed decisions for themselves. Both the American Library Association's Library Bill of Rights and ALA Code of Ethics encourages libraries and librarians to ensure that the criteria used to select materials do not discriminate on the basis of factors such as political or religious viewpoint, or the background, identity, gender, or beliefs of the publisher or author. As the Code of Ethics states, we distinguish between our personal convictions and professional duties, and do not allow our personal beliefs to interfere with fair representation of the aims of our institutions or the provision of access to their information resources. So that, in a nutshell, that's just one paragraph of this multiple 4-5 paragraph press release, but that's the core thesis statement of it.
Right.
Libraries provide access to the information regardless of whether or not they agree with it, and it's kind of a shame that this Board of Commissioners in Florida doesn't have the same ethical guidelines. That's a little story that we thought we'd point out, especially since it it's current and it has something to do with one of our previous topics.
Yeah.
So anything else to add on that, Colin?
I mean, not really. Yeah, it is. One would think that it would not be the purpose of a government official to be able to prevent access to any particular publication.
Yeah. Well, I don't like the idea of governments or any sort of governing body like being involved in the selection of library materials in general. Like that just seems, it's not their area of expertise, it can get censorious.
I wonder about that as well. What exactly is going on here and how common this is in parts of the country, I have no idea.
Yeah, and I certainly hope this doesn't become a theme, because I think there needs to be a degree of independence.
Right. I mean, obviously, libraries have to get their budget from somewhere.
Yeah.
Of course. But dictating what that budget can be spent on insofar as publications, specific authors, specific points of view, that sort of thing. That's, I think, where a line needs to be drawn.
Yeah. Now to dive into our main topic, zines. I am calling this episode Zine Mania. I don't know why. It just sounded fun. So what is a zine, Colin?
A zine is, it's short for magazine.
Oh.
Yes. It is essentially an independently published and oftentimes handmade, hand-assembled magazine that is meant for distribution or even sale to other people on a kind of a micro scale, effectively.
Okay. And I've heard, you know, yeah, short for magazine. I've also heard it as short for fanzine, which was just a derivative of magazine.
Fan magazine.
Yeah. Yeah. And zines have a long history in the United States, particularly with counterculture or non-mainstream points of view. Going back to the 30s and 40s, zines were very popular. You know, almost in a way, going back to the founding of this country. I don't know. Obviously, they didn't call them zines. They were like pamphlets. Yeah, things that were independently published and handed out that a lot of times espoused political views.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've certainly evolved over time, but it's very similar to those early pamphlets that have a huge history in the United States and in the early revolutionary days.
I think that's a completely fair comparison to make and a fair lineage to draw between the two, yeah.
Yeah, but they, you know, have kind of had an ebb and flow over the years, especially, like, the internet certainly changed a lot about zines. But, you know, they're kind of making a comeback again in kind of the same way that vinyl and, oddly, cassettes. I don't actually understand why cassettes are making a comeback. There's nothing convenient about them.
There isn't much. I kind of get it. And I think it's got a lot to do with the fact... This is going off tangent.
It's fine.
It's got a lot to do with the fact that for certain genres of music, pressing to vinyl was not always an option. It was a lot easier and cheaper to put things on cassette. So you do get a lot of independent electronic artists and punk artists, especially that, and their consumers, their fans, that have a lot of nostalgia for the cassette format rather than the vinyl one.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, so, yeah, zines are kind of making a comeback. One of this article that we're going to kind of use as part of an outline of the history of zines, posted in Mental Floss, mentions that even Kanye West has one now. That he produced alongside his line of footwear or clothing brand. So, not necessarily counterculture in that in that way. That's and just culture.
I don't think they necessarily have to be anymore. Yeah. They certainly got their start as kind of a countercultural thing, but
it's hard to say what actually makes a zine, because I mean a lot of things you can have a whole lot of different. It can be like a 6 or 8 page thing that was, you know, put together and stapled and very, very small circulation, self-produced, inexpensive.
Right.
Or it can be, you know, a 40, 50, 60, 70 page, almost full magazine that might have a slightly larger circulation, but they're still not mass produced or they're oftentimes given away for free.
Right.
A lot of times they may have like a singular editorial focus. I don't know. It's really, really hard to say what a zine actually is other than, you know, a magazine, but smaller and cheaper and a little more rule-free, a little wild a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I would maybe jump on the point of, like, independence as perhaps being a significant marker of something being a zine, but even that isn't necessarily the case. There are independent comics and journals and so on and so forth that we wouldn't necessarily consider a zine per se, but at this point, you know, it just kind of is all semantics, really. So
I will say as part of my research for this, I went in the Internet Archive and they do have a fairly extensive collection of digitized zines,
yes,
ranging from the 1940s to the present day.
Correct. Yeah.
I think they have over 4,000 to 5,000 of them right now, and it's a collection easily. that's you know, growing. And I went back and started at their oldest and started looking through them from the oldest, and I didn't get through all of them. I got up to about the mid-80s, I think, is when I ran out of time for this. Right. But it's interesting. The oldest ones, definitely science-focused, but not necessarily real science. Like, right. There is a lot of zines focused on UFO and UFOlogy and mm-hmm. aliens and trying to make contact and pretty wild stuff in there.
Yeah.
I did a text search just for Omaha, just to kind of see what would pop up. And there was one that had a couple stories, like old clips from the Omaha World Herald a long time ago, about some strange phenomena, like a sonic boom that people didn't know.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, people didn't know where it came from, and UFO, like possible UFO activity. So some very kind of fun things that people were putting together.
Right.
A lot of conspiracy theory type stuff. Mm-hmm. And this was back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And then there was a lot of international ones too. I think there was like a whole like Australian UFO society.
Sure.
And some British ones and an Italian one that like all had their own. And some of them actually seemed like they had pretty high production values, in that they were like fairly extensive, almost they look like academic journals and how they're produced.
Right.
But then some of them look like a bunch of clips from newspapers that were photocopied and put together and distributed or typed up on a typewriter. And
sure. There's a very particular kind of like zine aesthetic that I have foremost in my mind. And it's of that kind of, you know, like ratty, Xeroxed, some occasional splashes of like primary colors in there.
Yeah, not generally a lot of color unless they had a decent budget.
Right. Or if they were just printing directly onto colored paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I mean, I find that stuff fascinating. I really was into, science fiction. And So science fiction definitely was a huge part of the early zine community.
Arguably kind of what begat zines as we know them today would have been the early science fiction fans in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, like they would publish short stories from science fiction authors. Mm-hmm. These would be a little more legitimate than the UFO-focused ones. But, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of overlap in...
I'm sure there probably was.
Yeah, readership and circulation. And it is just interesting just seeing what survived from that time period. Because, I mean, I can only imagine with these Internet Archive ones that someone probably found a massive trove of old pamphlets in their attic.
Yeah.
And just digitized them and threw them online, and that's why they're in the Internet Archive now.
Box in the closet somewhere.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if a lot of like really independent like bookstores and record stores have this stuff moldering on a dusty shelf in a back room somewhere.
But one of the first like non kind of sci-fi or non-fiction zines I found was and this was kind of the first like really fan zine I found in the archives was Spockanalia, which is a Star Trek fanzine that started in the late 60s. And this is kind of, I noticed in the timeline going through, like in the 60s is kind of where the zine started kind of changing. You'd find more of these fanzines,
at least insofar as, you know, what is available to us.
There was a lot of horror movie fanzines, and back in the 60s or late 50s, like a lot of them were focused more on like the Universal monsters or the Hammer horror films.
Sure.
In the 80s, you get into the like splatter films and the slasher films and the video nasties, as the British called them, which we kind of touched on in another previous podcast. Yeah.
I had to say that I love that term.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me more excited to see a movie than knowing that it was branded as a video nasty.
So, and rock music.
Yes.
Oh, man. Not just rock music. Punk music. Grimy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that really took off in the 70s and 80s. A lot of zines were really focused on these subcultures of music.
Yep. And specifically, rebellious music.
Yeah. Things that weren't necessarily getting covered in mainstream press, but that had a following. Yeah, definitely punk zines. I found quite a lot of them in the in the archive. Actually, some of the largest collections they have a collection of a zine that was called Maximum Rock and Roll. They have 373 issues of it, so it ran for quite a while. But that's all about,
You might guess,
rock and roll,
Maximum and Rock and Roll,
punk. And it looks like it ran through most of the 90s and up until like the early 2000s. I don't necessarily see a lot after that.
Well, that kind of makes sense, right? Yeah. A lot of people say rock was dead by the 2000s. I disagree with them, but...
And that's kind of, too, when zines died a little bit in the...
For a little while.
Yeah, but they are definitely making a comeback. But I like just the art in a lot of these. Like, they have a lot of hand-drawn art. I'm sure a lot of it was commissioned by local artists and, you know, just thrown in. Definitely that grimy aesthetic that Colin was talking about. Yeah, where
grimy, Xeroxed.
Looks like they made a lot of headlines by cutting things out of other magazines and pasting it in.
Yeah,
and
it's
typing, you know, things on a typewriter.
I think of, like, pretty much any 70s punk rock album cover. That's kind of a not entirely dissimilar aesthetic to what a lot of these zines were looking like at the time.
Yeah, so. Just think of, like, the cover of a Clash album and the font off of that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yep.
But there's also a lot of anarchist and socialist stuff in there as well.
A lot of minority political viewpoints.
Oh, yeah.
Both extremely far left and extremely far right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like, I was digging through some and found one that appeared to be just focused on, like, death metal music. Mm-hmm. But, like, in the middle of it, I got this page that had, like, Nazi imagery and the 14 words on it, and I'm not going to get into that, but...
It is.
It's white nationalist neo-Nazi stuff. Right. I'm like, so there is the flip side of the coin. There's a lot of this really alternative, really extreme stuff covering the entire political spectrum.
Yep. And for anybody who's even casually into stuff like metal and punk, even those casual fans recognize that sometimes you're going to encounter something in this music that you love that runs directly counter to all of your beliefs, because it is not that uncommon for there to be elements of white supremacism and whatnot, specifically in extreme metal. So,
and on the flip side, zines were one of the first socially it was a way, especially in like the 80s, where the gay rights movement really got a good foothold, where where things like the AIDS epidemic may have been talked about before it was more acceptable to talk about or know. There was a whole culture on sharing information, helping people be safe.
Yep.
So that is what zines were great for, or are great for. Mm-hmm. But also on the flip side, you have, you know, the white supremacist stuff that may get shared through them.
And this all should sound a little familiar. It's kind of not completely unlike, you know, an internet message board or Reddit before there was Reddit. It was a way for these groups to come together, find like-minded individuals, and create content to do with what they loved.
Yeah.
Or believed in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I know we kind of talked about, you know, like the YouTube rabbit hole in some episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Might be similar.
Yeah.
Where it just gives a platform, whether that's good or bad, to views that aren't mainstream.
Yes, exactly. Going into the dark corners of YouTube, you can find, you know, like UFO conspiracy videos and all this kind of stuff. Stuff that several decades prior, these individuals, had they been around, would have potentially been making zines about rather than YouTube videos about.
Let me say, I really miss when conspiracy theories were fun.
Me too.
I think it was sometime after, like, well, probably after 9/11, when conspiracy theories took a really dark turn and... they just stopped being fun.
At least insofar as the visibility to, like, you know, the mainstream eye is concerned. Yeah.
I miss the early X-Files days when everything was a government conspiracy about aliens.
Yep. Like, aliens or, you know, the paranormal.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
That stuff was more fun.
Yep. Nope.
And there's a treasure trove of that stuff in the early zines.
Yes.
So.
And I think we were both... highly recommend that you browse the Internet Archive's zine collection. Of course, we do have to caution that there is going to be content that is going to upset, annoy, so on and so forth.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. There's content that might be considered pornographic, content that might be considered just extreme language.
Right.
Not necessarily poor language, but extreme language. Right.
But as a kind of fascinating like time capsule of these countercultural kind of touchstones, if you go into it with that mindset, it's such an enjoyable rabbit hole to fall into. You know, there's the occasional disappointment, of course, but it is fascinating.
Yeah, and it really, the ephemeral nature of some of this stuff is, I think, really why zines are making a comeback. I guess we can kind of pivot to that a little bit. Yeah. So how are they making a comeback? I was walking in my neighborhood recently, and there is kind of an art gallery studio in my neighborhood, and they have a little free library in front of it that is shaped like the TARDIS from Doctor Who. And they had a handful of zines that were just kind of in there that seemed like they were recently and locally produced, and you know, picked it up, and there was poems and short stories, and I thought that was kind of cool. I read some things from people that I probably never heard of and may never hear of again.
It's possible, yeah.
And but just that, the having that physical copy of this thing, like, it's very ephemeral. It's something that, you know, they maybe made 12 of or 20 of and distribute them to little free libraries in town, or maybe donated some to the local library. But outside of that, it doesn't exist.
Very well may not, yeah.
Yeah, and I think with the internet, it's also allowed people to, you know, e-zines are kind of a thing now, too.
Right. Or just the sale of physical zines that might be made in significantly more copies.
Yeah, where they might have self-publishing and, or, you know, they will do a larger run of zines and sell them online. I've seen a lot of... They almost build themselves as journals, but they're publishing short stories from writers, and they don't have mainstream like publisher support.
Yeah.
But they make enough through sales that they can pay people $50 for a short story and put it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, short stories, poetry. I've seen some little, you know, zines focused on like philosophy and, again, of course, music. So there's an audience for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it is, to some extent, a kind of a reaction against the internet, because, you know, we talked about how people that might have in previous generations made zines, well, now they can go on to Reddit, they can have a personal blog, they can even have a shared blog with other people, they can have e-magazines or e-zines. but as Joel pointed out, there's something to be said for how nice it is to have a physical item,
and
for it to be a limited distribution item.
And I find when I'm trying to read something like a short story, reading it online can be very difficult. There's too many distractions, you know. Can't focus when there's a new tweet or a new pop-up notification coming on your phone about the latest whatever that's happening.
No, I agree.
And, you know, gotta check Facebook, gotta check Twitter, gotta cycle through everything. And being able to turn that off and just focus on paper without a distraction. And I think that too, with libraries building up these collections of zines, it's nice as a historical artifact, as a local connection, but also, it's providing kind of a platform and a place for people to come and find these things that they may not have been able to find elsewhere, you know?
Or, you know, to bring something new to someone's attention that they never knew that they wanted or even knew that it existed to begin with.
Yeah, that is very fair. So I saw the Omaha Public Library in town is building up a collection of zines at the Benson branch, which is, you know, probably a good location for it, because the Benson neighborhood in Omaha is kind of, I mean, it's got kind of a counterculture vibe to it. They have a lot of art festivals and...
or just a cultural vibe, period, I would say. Yeah.
So, yeah, they're building up a zine collection. It looks like they're partnered with the Rowdy Boys Collective and Benson First Friday, which Benson First Friday is the group that puts on a big art show every month. So they have a lot of photographers and writers and physical artists. And so all of these people, these little art collectives coming right. together, and they're building up the zine collection. So they have donated and shared zines. They can be checked out. Looks like they have different policies on zines. They don't acquire library fines. Yeah, but they are part of the permanent circulating collection.
And to my understanding, it's relatively easy for patrons, if they want to add their own zines to the collection as well. Mm-hmm. So,
And I know that the University of Nebraska Omaha also has a number of zine special collections. They have a collection just on music zines, Nebraska-specific zines, zines created as class assignments, which is interesting. I was actually looking through that collection.
Boy, I hope mine from years ago is not in there still.
I did a search. It wasn't in there as far as I was aware. They only have 33, it looks
That's good. That's great.
and they're all, it looks like, part of a class assignment on coming up with my journey to well-being and having like a self-help kind of collage, but you know, looks like everybody kind of has their own take, and it's kind of a personal story for one of their counseling classes or right. sociology and psychology courses. Huh. So, they also have an LGBTQ plus zine collection, a comic zine collection, photography, health, poetry, and Omaha Zine Ephemera Collection. Business cards, flyers, prints, and ephemera created by zine creators in Omaha. Interesting repository that they have. Unfortunately, I don't believe their stuff is digitized. They have these collections, but I think you have to go to their library to look at them. Not available online. As for zines online, I still think the best place I found was the Internet Archive, though I'm sure there's a couple other good collections out there. Mm-hmm. So you said you made a zine before. How did you go about doing that?
It was for a class assignment. We had to buy a little textbook that I can't remember the name of, but this textbook was itself essentially a zine. And it was a zine about how to make zines. So it offered very practical examples of, you know, how you need to have the pages aligned, because it's assuming that you're printing multiple pages on a single piece of paper, in order to then fold that paper correctly and then staple it correctly so that all of the pages are, of course, facing the correct direction. And it was, I don't even remember what class it was for. It was something literature related. I think we had to analyze a piece of literature or the output of a particular author from a distinctly feminist point of view. And I think mine would have had something to do with some sci-fi I was reading at the time, probably. But, you know, we had to include art. We had to include both handwriting and typed text. And I am not an artist by any stretch of the imagination. And neither were many of my friends at the time, at least friends at the time who had the time and inclination to help me out. So I sourced some rather inexpert drawings, I believe even in crayon, from some of my friends to Xerox and put in this thing. As someone who's not a crafty or even necessarily a super creative type, I found it to be a frustrating experience, but a not unrewarding experience. There is something to be said for, even if it's something that you inherently kind of maybe dislike doing, something to be said for making something that is, you know, distinctly yours, like you're the one responsible for having made it. So, and I think I got a decent grade on it.
Nice.
So, I didn't fail the class at any rate, so I must have been doing something right.
So if you are interested in making your own zine, we will link to a Vice article called A Beginner's Guide to Making Zines. Mm-hmm. And they have some step-by-steps if you're interested.
Same practical advice that I was talking about.
Yeah, like how to fold the papers so you can staple it and have them actually be in order.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And let me tell you, that was the hardest part by far.
Yeah.
Especially if you're dealing with like an uneven number of pages or something like that. It's... what a nightmare.
So, yeah, get creative. Make a zine. Scan it. Put it online.
Hand it out to your friends.
Donate it to the library. Go to a conference and just scatter them around.
Yeah, and Joel and I were reminiscing before the podcast started about an old record store that used to be at Omaha, and how there would be, handmade, homemade posters, pamphlets, and zines just kind of scattered willy-nilly all over the basement of this place.
Yeah, I know that place was so cool.
Yeah, it was.
I think zines are very connected to the old music,
music. At least that's scenes. What I associate.
The alternative music scenes. I associated them with like the punk scene and the grunge scene.
Yeah, and indie rock and alt rock and stuff. Yeah.
And I think that the reason they really got so popular in the 80s is just because technology to produce them kind of caught up.
Yeah.
And that's when like Xeroxes and photocopiers started really being accessible.
Very widely available.
Yeah. And that was the main production. And in the 90s, I think the 80s and 90s really were a heyday for them.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But then the internet kind of came and people started blogging.
Right.
Now people don't blog anymore, do they? Not much.
Or they call it something other than a blog. I mean, I've seen some websites that, for all intents and purposes, I would consider to be a blog, but the website has branded itself as being a online zine or an e-zine or, something to that effect.
I guess maybe podcasts are like zines.
Yeah, they certainly are. Yeah. I think what the internet's done is it's kind of exploded the idea of these kind of like little self-published things that are easy to get out, that you don't have to charge people for, and that are relatively cheap for you to make. It's just on the internet, it's more than little booklets. You can record podcasts, you can record videos, you can make your own music, you can, have your own poetry or short story or philosophy blog if you really wanted to, political blog.
So I hope you're enjoying our audio zine about zines.
Right. And the one thing I'll say too that the internet's done, I don't know if a lot of these technically count as zines, but I would certainly count them as zines, is the rise of print-on-demand publishing, where you have a lot of very independent, usually just one or two people magazines that all they do is they do all their layouts and everything, and then they upload it to a print-on-demand service, and their customers can go and buy their work that way and then get it printed and sent to their home. So
I mean, the internet's really democratized this kind of sharing of information.
It's given you more avenues for expressing yourself in more ways. But it's
unfortunately,
nice to see
zines
make a comeback.
Yeah, with that, there's the infinite content issue that we've talked about before.
Right.
And the fact that, we are a capitalistic society, and it seems like the things that have money or corporate backing, podcasts as an example, now are big business. And so if you're just starting your own podcast now, it might be hard to find an audience.
It is crazy to think how a lot of the stuff used to be like individual creators or small teams of creators. And now, you've got big like Hollywood production companies that have their own podcasts. ditto huge companies that have their own YouTube channels and are producing their own content that way.
Yeah.
It's kind of the difficulty with new media. And, Joel mentioned that Kanye West has a zine. It's that kind of similar co-opting. From someone or a group of someone's that has a lot of capital trying to get into kind of like new media spaces. But of course, zines aren't quite new media anymore. They've been around since the 30s.
Yeah. Well, anything else to add? Check out some zines.
Yeah.
Make a zine if you want. Be creative.
Yeah. Next time you see a little free library or you're in the Benson neighborhood or you just need to kill a few minutes online, see what you can find zine-wise. See if it's something that appeals to you. And make one if you're up for the challenge. It is challenging.
And read some 70-year-old UFO conspiracies.
That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do when I get home tonight.
All right. Well, it's been fun. So until next time.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks.